name is Kyle. I am with Danny, the one and only person you go to for that pure 100% homegrown Krakoan petal goodness. If I'm talking about the good shit, you go to Danny. Danny, tell them about your product and how great it is.
All right, I'm running on a basic hydro system. I use the Emerald Harvest brand of nutrients, so we are getting the most pure and unadulterated Krakoan petal. I'm talking, I got no carcinogens, I got no blood, all those types of those PRCs, all those things that affect it. I'm talking, we're getting pure, all gold. So you come on down, you come on down, you tell me what you want, I'll make it happen.
Sure. Let's smoke it, sniff it, freebase it. Yeah, it's good stuff. Good stuff. But besides peddling his wares, he's also here to talk about Hellions today. Are you excited for some Hellions?
Very much so, because Hellions is a great series.
It is good. I am enjoying this. I'm enjoying the team dynamics. It works really well. I'm enjoying... Every character seems to have a purpose somewhat for the most part, which is great, you know. No one, you know, not there for no reason. They all are there to serve a purpose, unlike a certain book that's new and
We don't talk about that.
But yeah, I'm loving it. You're loving it. It was great. I'm liking the whole dynamic between all the characters. Last we left off, they ran into Madeline Pryor, a clone of Jean Grey, which is interesting to see her around once again. And she is on the cover of issue 3. Look at those thighs, man.
Yeah. That's like pretty intense on how they do that. Yeah. But I mean, it's actually a really iconic cover, kind of throwback to the old school design of her. This is a good cover. They do a good job here with her on this cover, and it makes me feel like I'm reading a more traditional X-Men comic, even though it's a very bizarre concept. I really like what they're doing with their version of Suicide Squad, the X-Men Suicide Squad, essentially.
Yep. It's pretty much what this is, and I'm enjoying it. I'm surprisingly enjoying it. But yeah, you want to get into this? You ready to get into this? See what happens with Madeline Pryor and the gang and whatnot. So let's do this. We start off back at the Sinister Clone Farm, I guess, the old cloning farm, and some of the old legacy marauders are kind of like attacking some of the Hellions as Havoc has been, you know, he's a little occupied by his boner, one would say.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. So yeah, he's taken aback, right, by Madeline Pryor, and as it happens, she covers his mouth, like straight up covers it. Can't talk, nothing.
Like a spell on it.
Yeah. And as that's happening, it kind of goes through this kind of montage, right, of her and everything, of this world, this really weird
story. Yeah.
Yeah, more or less, she's bringing back her old backstory while like going through this reality warping piano playing.
It's like a kind of like an illusionary spell kind of thing going on to kind of bring us up to speed on Madeline.
I imagine if this was
anyone who really isn't tied to her convoluted, messy history.
If this was a movie, you'd just be hearing like a piano ding in the background as it's trying to like show you these flashes of things. It's interesting. It's interesting. And it mentions his brother as well. So definitely catching you up to speed.
But it's quick. It's not labored. And it flows with kind of the madness of what's going on.
So exactly. It works. And so what Havoc does is instantly finds a glass shard on the ground and fucking just rips open his mouth, or I guess lack of mouth, that Madeline covered with her magic ways.
Yeah, pries open his sealed mouth with like a jagged piece of glass.
Ooh, did not wash it.
Instantly rolls into like professing his love for her.
Right?
Missed her so dearly. It was really weird.
It was weird. And he's so like, you want to know how I got these scars? And just makes out with her.
Yeah. So it's like kissing her, and well, he proclaims all this stuff about how like he had always loved her, and then he was tired of living in his brother's shadows, and all these other things. And she goes, "Oh, you're messed up and crazy in the head. I can work with this." And then they start making out.
Yeah. It's just like, oh,
I like the way they draw that though, like her like leaping on him and like just like embracing him. That was a really cool page.
Yeah.
And honestly, she's been very cuckoo through this whole Hellions arc. Like in a way that has been similar, like it's kind of stuck to her storytelling and her kind of character portrayal.
Right.
So I like how they did the little backstory, and I like how she's very much opportunistic with what's going on with Alex's psyche. And there seems to be a lot of emotional like degradation and mental instability with Alex. So they're just two crazy people making out.
Just two crazies. When two crazies meet each other, it causes havoc around them, but boy, do they look like they're having fun.
I saw what you did there, you sneaky bitch. What? What? Her name is Aurora? She jumped off the bitch called Aurora? Oh my god.
Mind.
You could write for her.
You would think, but we got people like Leia up in here. Let's not digress. Also, yeah. I like that you can't really understand what Havoc's saying because he doesn't have lips, really.
Yeah, you like cut a fucking like mouth out of his lips that is not accurate, so he's not quite landing his P's and T's well. His puzz and tuz.
Exactly. Exactly. But let's keep going. No love lost. Krakoa offers a fresh start for all mutants, no matter their sordid past. Mr. Sinister has taken command of a team of disreputable mutants, including the alleged reformed Havoc and reluctant team watchdog Psylocke, as the new Hellions to destroy his defunct cloning lab and prove themselves productive members of society. But when Madeline Pryor, Jean Grey's clone, and Cyclops's and Havoc's ex-lover unleashes
Cable's real mom
unleashes imperfected clones of Legacy Marauders, a wild child begins attacking his teammates. It'll be all the Hellions could do to survive the experience. So we leave off with Quanon, Psylocke.
Throwing down. She's trying to establish herself as the alpha.
Still trying to establish herself as the alpha with Wildchild. This dude is going savage on her. And
she's not having it. She's going to plunge her psi blade right into his fucking skull.
Right. And that's more or less what she does. She just right through the skull as she yells, "I'm the alpha." And the psychic stab pretty much wipes his memory.
More it wipes up his higher cognitive
higher
function,
cognitive.
As she explains in the next page, where she's like, "There's nothing left for you of you except
for your
except your lower
functions, which is more.
Just makes him even more animalistic.
Exactly, which is a weird moment. It's a great movie moment, but logically, it's like, yeah, you should have known this. But yeah,
it's
so
your
now,
power. Like, it's not changed any. But for the action in the comic, it definitely heightens the moment.
He's like an empty slate, though. Yeah, so he goes even more savage.
And his eyes are just yellow with rage.
Yeah, with rage. And we cut to Madeline Pryor, Havoc, and Grey Crow. And Grey Crow's hung up upside down. And what do you think of this weird like digital blurring on characters? And it's like a Photoshop effect to create a blur, but it always comes off fake to me. What do you think of that? You see it in the top panel.
It's like forced perspective. It has like a distancing and perspective. And when done lightly, I appreciate it. I think here they didn't lean on it too heavy, but I have seen some issues, especially even in Hellions, where they get a little too heavy on that kind of design. And it's just not worth it. I think you can draw perspective well enough on its own without having to use filters.
Yeah, exactly.
But I love how they're having this like conversation back and forth about each other, and then like fucking Scalp Hunter's just hanging out in the background.
Just
like,
hanging out.
What's going on?
Right?
But then when we get to the next page, there's the rest of the fucking zombie fucking marauders just wailing on fucking
Orphan Maker.
Orphan Maker. Yeah, they just beat the shit out of
him. It's a weird comical moment. I wish this was like an animation, because that would have been a great animated timing where they're just talking serious. Cut to Orphan Maker nanny just getting wailed on.
Yeah, but, and all the fucking marauders are like singing about it and crazy. Yeah. They're just like saying all this crazy stuff because they're clearly being influenced by Madeline's control too.
Exactly.
Like, later on when her control kind of weakens.
Yes, and she mentions that they're hungry, right? And
they're hungry.
Yeah, and they want what's it called? What is it called?
I already forgot. Maybe they're... For their hunger?
Yeah.
I think they just want to eat.
They just want to eat? I don't know. She
talks about gifting them with an insatiable hunger and kind of turning them into mindless zombies.
That's weird.
And
okay.
She's also focusing on how her and Gray Crow is a history, because back when he was doing some scalp hunting as scalp hunter, mm-hmm. he shot her.
Yes.
He actually was the one who murdered her originally, and she brings that up, and she shows it that like they're completely under her control now.
Yeah.
And he talks about like, what did you do to the marauders? And she's like, I can do whatever I want to them. And she has Arclight come up, and she summons a dagger with magic and gives it to Arclight and says, cut off your hand and eat it.
Right. And she's just showing off that pretty much they're in control, or she's in control.
Yeah, like this More is her less. Show, and that she's going to do whatever she wants. And she notes that she's got some vendetta against him, and if she's going to get, he's going to have to deal with it. And then she gives him the crazy eyes when talking about
it. Oh, those crazy eyes.
Regular eyes, the subterfuge eyes.
Yeah, hidden behind the subterfuge, crazy eyes for sure. But we cut back to Wild Child
and Psylocke.
And fighting Psylocke.
Yeah, she's having enough of this. She's like, all right.
Yeah.
Fuck this. I'm going with plan A, which was I'll just murder you.
Yeah, I'm just going to fuck you up.
She breaks a bunch of his bones and then snaps his neck, which would kill him if he was a normal person, but because he has like a saber tooth healing factor,
right?
He's fine. But he's fine. Essentially, she's like, good boy. Yeah, he's docile now.
So, breaks a couple bones, snaps a neck. And she just lets him do his thing as she heals. But we cut to this this message called That Time We Gave a Team to a Hand Assassin. And what is it saying? More or less.
It seems like this is an overview of someone like kind of giving a rundown of what Hellions is and kind of showing their concern with that there's a lot of problems that could come out of this, the showing that their distrust towards Mr. Sinister, and that they think that maybe putting Psylocke in charge was all a part of Mr. Sinister's plan, and they're playing right into their hand. Even though Scott thinks it's a good idea, he could be being played by Sinister as well.
Right.
And at the end of the day, it could turn out that Psylocke is completely under Sinister's thumb. That's pretty much all it says.
Gotcha. But we go back to Madeline and Havoc. And they're still talking. They're just like...
He's like completely infatuated with her. His lack of being able to form P's and T's with his mouth.
T's, can't do anything. Just go for me. You can't do it, can you?
Try to say a word that has a P in it and keep your mouth open all the way. It doesn't happen. Like, ha!
But yeah, this motherfucker is...
But she reveals to him that like her plan is that she has tapped into the entire clone farm that Sinister had set up, and she wants to release all the clones on Krakoa to flood the gates because they're mutants, so they'll get through.
Yep.
And she wants to just keep like fucking flooding them until there's no one left. And this is because she wants to get revenge on Scott and Jean and the X-Men and all that stuff.
Yeah. And this is all Havoc is being ran by his donor, a boner, because he's sad.
He's sad, but he's also a little crazy, so it's like a bit of both.
So he's like, he's still infatuated, still like not over her, but at the same time, he's recognizing that like that her revenge is for Scott, not for him, type of situation.
Like it's all just Yeah, just like monologuing, like, I'm going to destroy them and get my vengeance, kind of generic villain stuff. But it works here. She's got history with that, so it works out. But the real star of the show here is Orphan Maker and Nanny just still getting whaled on.
Yeah.
It seems like Arclight is getting some of her control back because of Madeline Pryor's focus being shifted a little bit. So she's starting to talk a little more to Headhunter and like kind of sharing her. Kind of her lamenting about being in this situation.
Right.
But while they're talking, the others are wailing on Orphan Maker, and Nanny's like, you don't want to crack open his suit. And they're like, why? And all this acid just splashes out right as they crack it open, like melting the shit out of
just fucking melting one of the dude's face off, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. But as it happens, they go to attack Nanny. And it seems like we're getting what's her name?
Arclight.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, where she's pulling her dagger. She's still pulling her dagger on Headhunter and is like about to finish him off.
About to finish it off, but
Cut to Quan. Having established.
Yes.
Alpha ship.
She's like
alpha.
She's catching her breath as that happens while a child wakes up and
he feels like such a blank, like
zombie. Look at him. Yeah, he's just like,
hey, I'm your pet now.
Yeah. And
he also has this comment where he's like, knowing who's in charge, it calms my mind.
It calms my mind. This feels nice. I feel safe now. Let's do this.
And then you got a mess to clean up, and that's where the issue ends when they're ready to kind of do their counterattack.
Pretty much. She's ready now that Wild Child's on the side. He's not causing chaos anymore. They could finally help out. They've been pretty much out the whole issue.
Though the fighting was interesting when they threw down amongst themselves. Mm-hmm. The action here and there was good. The violence was definitely more on the muted end because they were just doing it in weird ways where it's like the only real violent thing we saw was like Havoc cutting his mouth open. Besides that, all the other stuff was just people wailing on each other. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I guess Wild Child got his neck snapped. That was pretty cool and a few bones broken. But I mean, he's got a healing factor, so it's all shock value and not real weight in the story. But that was kind of cool to see him just like get broken and then put himself back together. And then the issue ended, which was pretty cool. Good so far. Not great, but good. I did enjoy a few things, but nothing wowed me as much as the first two issues. This was much more of like a linking chain issue. Next issue, things get interesting.
Yeah. Next issue, we'll see some interesting stuff. So let's just get into this. Issue number 4. What do you think of this cover, which I guess is Segovia doing a Jim Lee cover? Is that what it is?
Because Jim it feels like it, right? It's
that's well, Jim Lee like... has his, it says Segovia after Jim Lee, and it has Jim Lee's signature. But Jim Lee's not credited, so I think this has to be an old Jim Lee cover that he just kind of homaging.
It, the way the character models are drawn, it definitely feels that way.
Right, yeah. I dig it. I dig it. This is very reminiscent of those old covers, for sure, which I like.
It started with a Nightcrawler quote.
Yes, the last one did too. We've been skipping over the Nightcrawler quotes, so it seems like they're in all of them, though.
Yeah, it seems like maybe he's the one who's writing his concerns from that.
Oh, yeah, could be.
That would make sense.
Because he does seem like the overviewer of all this. But he says, may I be heard in this? The challenges of the soul outweigh those of the body. Either we befriend the sorrows of the past or they destroy us. And let me go back to issue 3. Issue 3, we didn't say it, but Nightcrawler says, I do wonder which binds us more, Xavier's ideals or the trauma of being a mutant, the dream or the pain.
That's a good one.
I like that one. So yeah, these little notes by Nightcrawler throughout the issue is interesting. But yeah, we're back in Nebraska at the freaking cloning facility. With Madeline again.
Back in Nebraska, but I'm fine being in Nebraska this time.
This time it's an okay Nebraska. It's
Omaha. That's like the only good place in Nebraska anyway.
The only good place. Come on down. Ooh. But yeah, we get Madeline and Havoc in his mouth still all muddled up, not being able to say his P's and T's quite properly. And
she talks about wanting to sacrifice him as like some sort of ritual. So essentially these demon hands come out of the wall, warp out the wall, and they pin him down and they hold him.
Yes.
And then she creates a pentagram on him.
Mm-hmm.
Like a magical incarnation to kind of pin him in place as if he's about to be sacrificed.
He's about to be sacrificed. As she says, they gather to watch our love bleed. That's definitely something a crazy bitch would say.
Yep, yep. Don't you see how much I love you?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've all been down that road.
I like how empaths in the issue title page, or the issue portraits, but he's been dead for like 3 issues.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about empath.
They died. Shot him like right as they got there.
Right.
He sent him the mission, and like Greg Crow was like, done.
He died instantly. I forgot about that. I forgot he was on the team, to be honest.
He's in the cover as well, but I mean, he's already dead.
Yeah. So,
I think that might be one of his clones, one of the Marauder clones, but I don't know.
Maybe he'll join the next mission, or maybe this is his trope he just does before you're ever getting into
anything. Oh, they're going to turn him into Kid Omega. That's Kid Omega's thing. They better not.
No, we'll see. We'll see. Let's get into this. Heartbreaker. Mr. Sinister has taken command of a team of disreputable mutants, including the alleged reformed Havoc and reluctant Team Watchdog Psylocke, as the new Hellions ostensibly as rehabilitation. Their first mission to destroy Sinister's defunct cloning lab went south with the expected appearance of Madeline Pryor, Jean Grey's clone, and Cyclops's and Havoc's ex-lover. As Madeline informed Alex of her plans for revenge upon Krakoa for excluding her, Psylocke battled for control against her rebelling team member, Wildchild. Meanwhile, the rest of the Hellions are fighting for their lives against Madeline's team of imperfect legacy Marauder clones. So we cut back to Scalp Hunter. What's his new name? I already forgot. Grey Crow.
Grey Crow, but it's like, that's his last name, I believe.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm going to keep calling him. Was he Scalp Hunter or was it Headhunter?
Headhunter, sorry, yeah.
I was going to call him Headhunter because I think that's fine. I mean, if Grey Crow is less offensive than Headhunter as a Native American name, then, I mean, it's like how people say, like, people of color now, whereas like saying colored person was wrong, but it's right. Like colored is literally the same word, just rearranged.
It literally means the same thing in English.
Yeah, so if we're just gonna go with generic Native American like monikers, and Headhunter is like the cutoff, but Grey Crow isn't, then I'm feeling like we're insane. So yeah. I'm just gonna say fuck it, keep it. Yeah. But I mean, she's getting ready to like murk. She started chewing on him, so she's like eating him.
Yeah, they're about to feast.
Pretty zombie like, and she looks back to see them wailing on like fuck. It's still just wailing.
Still wailing, and they're like, all right, it's time. Let's just eat them now. And they're about to get down on Nanny and Orphan Maker. And as it happens, we get Wildchild coming in, doing some damage, and right behind Psylocke. Look at that. Just right to the head, a psychic stab. That's a great action.
Yeah,
and the kick to the face, too.
Same. Like, she's got psychic stab on one and kick to the face on the other. Very dope. And then she pulls out a fucking
shuriken.
Shuriken and fucking punches with it.
Yeah.
That's pretty fucking dope. And then it gets even doper because the combat in this is fucking phenomenal.
It's nice.
Is almost, even without even expecting it, it flows. Like,
oh man, it's good.
That spear and fucking Psylocke is like, get on your feet and fight, and he's like, yes ma'am, and she whips it out of his stomach,
pulls it out of him and throws it
right at Riptide, causing Riptide to duck and stop eating Headhunter, and he fucking grabs
it,
the spear, and uses it to free himself and jumps down instantly and is back in the fight.
Oh my god,
it's like, damn. Look at how they all fought alongside each other. We didn't just get panels of Prodigy punching people for some reason alongside everyone else doing their crazy shit. We actually got like the team interacting with each other physically, either formally or passively.
We actually got teamwork with a team. Yeah. Who would have thought?
Or choreography that's like in their fight. Like their choreography.
Yeah,
just their fights off of each other.
It flows from one thing to the next.
Like reactively. Like it's like they're physically reacting to each other's combat. Yes. Instead of just it paneling next to each other as if they're both fighting in, or as if they're all fighting in separate areas, yet they're fighting right next to each other.
Exactly.
I hate that shit. I hate that shit so much. We just show panels of them, people floating, people punching. It's like, that's stupid. Show their like punches reacting to a person that is then reacting to the person who is next to them, and so on and so forth. That's how a fight is drawn.
Right.
I guess I'm expecting too much.
I guess so. But it was great. It works. Yeah, it works.
Yeah, I love how like Riptide's like, all right, wait a second. Like, everyone calm down. Like, mm-hmm. I can feel some of my control coming back. I think what's going on right now is Madeline is casting a spell that is weakening her hold on us. I think we all can just get along for a second as they look over it, and like Wild Child is like finishing off ripped open. It's great.
It's great. Yeah, and they're like, all right, let's move out, I guess.
But they wanted to deal with like what was left of the clones, and Psylocke mentioned that, and Scout Punter's like, no. And I'm just like, no, these are my people. Like, let me get them out and take care of it. And she's like, okay, you got this?
Yeah, it's no big deal.
I'm just trying to calmly talk to him about, like, sorry about trying to eat you. Like, I don't know what got into me, but, like, everything's fine now. And he's like, don't worry, everything is fine. And he just fucking shoots them.
Yeah, just guns them down.
Blam, blam, blam. That whole page done.
Done.
Runner's clones, done. Cut to the team investigating on the other side of the fucking facility.
So they're going throughout this facility, and Danny sees something, and she's
remnants
like,
of orphans and stuff, yeah. And like vats, and she's pissed. She's like,
she's sad.
I'm pissed at you. I'm gonna fucking have words with you later.
Yeah. Very, she's Nanny. That's what she does. Yeah,
she's pissed about, you know, mutant orphans being experimented on. But while they're lamenting over that, we cut to Madeline.
Havoc,
like, finishing up their ritual, and she's talking nonsense to him, and he's just like, yeah.
He's like, yeah, cool. She's like, are you scared? Like, just talking, like, you should be scared and whatnot. And
he's like, I offer my body for you. I don't care. I'm fucking nuts.
Yeah, and as that's happening, as they're weirdly doing their crazy seduction towards one another, she's like, yeah, this mutilation is going to be great. We should stream this in the Mojoverse, man. Why aren't we streaming this? Fuck.
Likes and upvotes.
As that's happening.
Out of nowhere.
Boom. Blam. Boob shot.
The fucking hero and like fucking MVP of Hellions. Fucking Scalp Hunter propped up, holding himself up with one arm, hanging from the ceiling, fucking snipes Madeline's heart out of nowhere. And fucking Alex is just like,
I have no lips.
He's like, no.
And she's down. And as she's down, she's kind of like not dying. And as she's dying, she touches Alex's cheek as he grabs her. And she's like most anime characters starting off the first episode. She's like, here's my memories. Go solve this.
Or also she shifts, gives some magic to him to heal him.
Is that what it is? Oh, like, yeah. His better, lips.
And then she like fixes his face. His really grotesque face. She's like, you remembered me, yes? And then she's like, I exist. People can't forget about me. I'm real. And then she just
dies. She's like, oh, you remember me. You remember me. That means I am a real person. I'm not a clip.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I was real. And this like healing chimes to Alex as like fucking Scalp Hunter's like, oh fuck, I gotta get out of here.
Yeah,
he Alex does his best like Vegeta rage moment. Like,
yeah, he does.
Like, I'm bringing this fucker down with just my power alone.
And everyone bails, man. They run out.
Like the rest of the Hellions were just like, weren't even like privy to what's going on. But right away, Psylocke is like, oh shit, that's Alex, like freaking out. We got to get out of here.
Yeah.
And they do like a very Indiana Jones moment with Scalp Hunter just like trying to dodge all the explosions and fires and energy pulses from Alex.
Yeah, he's just like, fuck, as he's trying to escape.
We even get a panel cut to outside to see what's going on, and the rest of the Hellions dealing with it, but then you still cut back into fucking Scalp Hunter's like, god damn it, I'm not out yet.
Fuck,
I found the outside. Okay. And the explosion is literally chasing him, and he lands, like, it stops right by where they're all at.
And it's great because they don't curse ever in comics, so it's always just like these blobs of like at symbols and stuff, just
Yeah,
as he's
like
trying to escape. But
characters
actually,
and stuff, yeah.
one time where it doesn't actually feel silly, it works pretty funny to its advantages.
This is the one of the few times. Most of the time it's just like,
Just
oh
non
man,
it's nonsense.
you put in the pound symbol and an at symbol for effect. Ah!
Oh
It's like,
no.
no, I just feel stupid. And we're just playing Idiocracy to try to skirt around swearing. Because you know what they mean. You know what they're saying. If you count the letters,
It worked
if you
in
count
the
the number or how many letters there are and what they're using it, you know exactly what they're saying.
Yeah, see, it's weird because like that in the 80s worked, you know, the 70s, the 80s, we were as a
It was
teenager,
trying to be
that
cartoon.
felt rebellious, right? And it's like this is a way for us to speak our minds in a public forum where we couldn't speak our minds, where you were censored by the publisher or whatever. So it kind of works, but
Also,
now
marketing-wise, comics back then were for kids. Let's be
comics were,
honest.
yeah, comics
They were
back then were
marketing them
actually
for
for teens.
children. This is for adults. This issue is not for kids. This issue is an adult issue. Even though it didn't get any parental advisories like some of the Wolverine and X-Force issues did, this is a very
I think it
violent,
did.
very gory. This is a very murder-heavy issue.
Issue 3 did. I don't know if issue 4 did.
Oh, but
Has
issue
a
three
parental.
did have a parental advisory?
Yeah, this one does
Oh,
too.
okay. Fair enough. Well, then there you go. Yeah, this is for adults. So
But
them not swearing is just stupid.
my point
And it's
is that
like paying for adults.
it's a
Like, why?
trope. It was yeah, exactly. It's a trope that was there for a certain time. You're putting a parental advisory on. Why are you putting a parental advisory on and giving me this pound sign gibberish? Stop
Yeah,
playing
that's
these
like
games.
saying like, you know, uncensored, and then I get in here and like have it censored. You're like, what? What are you
Yeah,
worried about?
I don't know.
But Havoc comes rolling out of the exploding building, and he has completely lost his memory, and he's like, "Did
His
I do that?"
best Urkel moment.
And then right away, Wildchild's like, "Man, I guess we're all just fucked up and a bunch of crazy people." And then fucking like Scalp Hunter starts laughing. Alex starts
Starts
laughing,
laughing.
everybody starts laughing, even like Orphan Maker and like Nanny's like, don't laugh, this is wrong.
This is, yeah, she's not. Oh, it's great. It's a good moment. It's a good moment. That's a team dynamic right there. But yeah, they're just like, you're a crazy fuck. We're all crazy fucks. Look at us. Look at us being a bunch of crazy fucks. It's a good
Very much a X-Force style, or not X, not
suit.
X-Force, but Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad,
It
yeah.
feels very much like a Suicide Squad ending, which is fine because that's what they're going for.
Yes, but then we get the demolition operation of Essex State Home for Foundlings, and this is more or less just a debriefing
Yes, what happened?
of what just happened, straight up. Empath was KIA'd. Only Rai smiles offered as explanation, so no one even mentioned what happened to him. I like
But
that.
it's this was expected and within tolerance.
And with intolerance, so that it was built into the system. They're okay with it.
It feels like they talk about how Havoc kind of is still a big concern, and he and then pretty much says that like, yeah, he really didn't develop much. He seems to have gotten, if anything, worse. And then he brings up he all he remembers is someone shooting Madeline. That's all he can remember about what happened. And he seems pretty set on trying to get her resurrected as the resurrection protocols, so they're going to talk about that. They talked about John Gray Crow doing some decent amount of character development, but in the end he wants to go his own way, and he feels like they should all just split. Then they mentioned the stuff about Empath. Wildchild calmed down and is now like stuck on Psylocke and is like pretty much like dotting on her every move. And she's kind of just grinning, bearing it. So she doesn't really care. Nanny seems to be really like pissed and like traumatic over finding all the dead orphans, and so it's now pissed at Mr. Sinister. And I don't think they talk about Orphan Maker really at all. Yeah, and that's it.
That is
Oh,
it.
there's
Well,
been a
no,
lot
we
of
get
whole
that. We get
discussion
an
about
epilogue.
Empath dying. It seems like this was a success, even though we knew we were going to be taking mulligans on Empath
Yeah.
like that. And they also say that their violent expression was now curbed. They were able to express their violence in a way that worked. no human casualties, except for Madeline Pryor, but they say that's okay because she really wasn't human. Right. But then they also have to find out if she counts as a mutant clone in her own, and the philosophical debate will now come from this.
Yes, which is a good question to ask, which I'll bring up in a second after we get to the ending, but we end this issue with an epilogue. We get Greg Crow hanging out on the beach where we last met him before joining the team, still claiming his guns as Psylocke comes up, more or less, and she's talking
about the clones and yes. like what happened and about him killing it, but She acknowledges that was it. You weren't denying your nature. This was just the truth of like how you handled the situation. And then she says, like, a dog will hunt. What can you say? And then she pets Wild Child.
As she pets Wild Child, who's just hanging out by his side. So happy, too.
And then she says this quote about, we must rest peace wherever we can find it. And then they get that nice little sunset.
That's a... interesting. What do you think about that in terms of just the reality? Like, that's more or less saying, like, yeah, what happens between the lines happens. That's life.
I think that she's acknowledging that they're all so fucking broken that any semblance of peace they can find, they need to hang on to because
right.
they're not going to get it regularly. So when it does fortunately come along, they must take it for what it is.
And take what you there. Can type of situation. Yeah.
Yeah. I think she's very grounded and very realistic. And it seems like she's coming over to have a Wild Child. At first they said it, she was pretty reluctant about it, but in this scene here, it seems like she's making her peace with it.
Yeah, yeah. As a
two of the most awkward brother conversations in history. We go to Bar Sinister.
Ooh, Sinister. We get Alex and Scott. And more or less, Scott's like, I tried, but it seems like it's a no. The council doesn't want to resurrect a clone of Jean. So let's talk about that. They don't want to resurrect the clone of Jean, but what about a separate cuckoos? What about, like...
Correct.
Honey Badger and all those Wolverine
offspring. X-23, correct. That is a big plot hole.
What about all those characters?
Now, the only caveat that gives those characters a pass is that those characters have instructionally and continuously built off of being a part of the paradigm and being team players. So those characters are not only integral to the plot, but they also have earned their own right to be there. Madeline Pryor has been a villain pretty consistently, right. And it's been problematic. Also, she's a straight up clone, whereas the other ones are variations.
Sure.
There is enough variation to say that they're own characters within it, except the cuckoos, which are really just all, I don't know, they're variations too, because considering their powers work in unison off of each other, mm-hmm. sure, they're not variations of each other, but they're different enough.
I think of them just like twins, like how
yeah,
twins
like are. Yeah, triplets, quadruplets, all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like that's less of a clone factor and more of just an individual. So that's why I would just say the fact that she's a problem alone. Just she can't be trusted. She's too much of a wild card.
That would have been fine. You don't have to play like yeah. that. This she's a clone just brought up too many questions. I'm like,
yeah. Then it became like, well, now you're a hypocrite then.
Yeah, exactly.
Like there are tons of mutant clones.
But yeah, she's Alex is really mad, and he
even tries to grill Scott on it. He's like, well, what do you think
about it?
And he could say, it doesn't matter what I think. I'm just sorry it didn't work out. And it's like, well, she was a real person. She did exist. She said the same thing she said like right before she died, kind of echoing that. And then, Scott's just like, I'm sorry, Alex, I can't help you.
Yeah.
And Alex starts crying, and wherever there's a rift between the Summers brothers, there can't be Sinister far off. And even he laments about it, where he's like, I never fucking get tired of this shit ever.
It's good. So good. I love how much he's enjoying their pain for the most part. But as that's happening, he is suddenly shocked by Nanny just kind of popping up.
She's like, I saw what you did.
Yeah. She's like, I saw it. I saw the parts.
Oh my God, please, a little warning.
Yeah. That little mouth, it's beyond just, I love it. I love it.
It's so creepy. And she gets real dark. We get some subterfuge and they close in. And she's right? like, all those dead mutant children throw away like trash. You're an awful lot of trouble, Mr. Sinister. Mm-hmm. And he says, oh, where am I? Oh, have I woken up this morning and suddenly became not the man who has made eternal life possible for all Krakoans? Please, everyone who's resurrected owes their lives to me. They are my children. I am the father. Last I looked, Daddy gives the spankings. He doesn't bend over. And take it. Oh, and then it's like, oh, she gets dark and has like the best liner after. Where it's like, how many? And he's like, what do you mean? How many mutants have been resurrected? Remember,
like, do you want to real up?
How many of these children are there? And he's like, I'd have to look up the numbers. Why? Why is that relevant? And she's like, because when I punish you, I want to know how many orphans it'll make. Ooh. And I like Sinister's response. He's like, Didn't love that.
Yeah, I love that. Love that. She's like, oh, this is, that's something I'm going to have to circle back around to later.
And then, ending with this, it says next X of Swords issue.
X of Swords next. We are rounding out these issues. Danny, what did you think of Hellions issue number 3 and 4?
It's great. Hellions was great. I honestly thought it was a lot better than what I had imagined it going to be from the get-go. Mm-hmm. But I like the paradigm of them being a Suicide Squad. I like the team dynamic and how they play off of each other. I like the character building that they've done. It seems like that even Psylocke in a few issues has done more character development than Betsy did in the whole run of Excalibur. Right. So 4 issues, she got like some progress. Not a lot. Not in, like an insane amount, but something. Whereas Betsy did nothing. So overall, I'm fucking fine with that. It's great. I have nothing really bad to say about it. Only good things. And I liked a lot of things. A lot of the jokes and the one-liners and the really like just over-the-top violence, especially by like Scalp Hunter when it comes to dealing with the clones. That shit was great.
Yeah,
just that like fucking shit-talking by Nanny at the end was the cherry on top.
Right, yeah. I really dug the art direction with Psylocke kind of taking lead as we see her attacking, then taking out Wildchild's spear, throwing that to Grey Crow, who gets out, and just the teamwork and the way they visualized it is beautiful. And that's what I want. I want to see more of that.
Yeah, more fights drawn like this, because this is how you do fights. This is how fights are supposed to be, especially with teams. It's like, if you're not going to have them fight as a team, then why even have a team?
Exactly. That is the exact point. But I am enjoying this. This has been a surprise, right, Danny? I was not expecting this.
100%. I would have never thought that a Hellions issue was going to be this much above all the other issues, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, it's right up there with X-Force. It's right up there with what Wolverine's doing. The good New Mutant stuff is right up there. It's right with that.
Yes, agreed. So. Couldn't agree more, and I'm enjoying this, and I look forward to reading more of this. But next we are going in to X-Force, and after that we will be heading up Juggernaut, and then finally X of Swords will be on its way. Excited?
Maybe we'll have to dive into that more to find out. First issue kind of left me half and half. We'll find out more. We'll actually more excited to do that Juggernaut issue.
Juggernaut's going to be interesting. Yeah.
Juggernaut's definitely going to be an interesting one.
I am excited. So good things to come. And I'm sure a lot more slogs to slog through. But stick with us. We will tell you what is the trash and what isn't. But before we take off, Danny, do you want to say anything to the fine folks who will die by the hands of the robots? But what should they do before they die by the hands of the robots?
Before you die by the hands of the robots, I'd say you should go out there and try to invent your own robots that then kill those robots before then they can kill you. But you have to use a time travel MacGuffin to do it. Oof. So if you can make some sort of robots that involve with some sort of time travel nonsense, then you should be fine. According to X-Men Mythos, that's how you circle back.
You should be good. You just circle back and just do it again.
More robots and time travel. That's all you people need.